I know some folks who know a lot about love and how to embody love, and I've invited some of them to help me with the message today. So they also know all about loving the earth. So take it away, youth and family.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Faith.
Hi. We're just going to talk about some blessings that the children and the youth of Unity would like to share with you all. So, Kira, what's your favorite thing about Earth?
Animals.
And what's your affirmation? I am a nature mystic. Can you show everyone? Could we say that all together?
I am a nature mystic.
Thank you, Kira. And Luna, how do you feel connected to Mother Earth?
I feel connected to Mother Earth with the plants, because if they weren't here, we wouldn't be here. And if we weren't here, they wouldn't be here, because we kind of like revolve around each other.
Beautiful. And what's your affirmation?
My affirmation is playing in nature is good for me.
Beautiful. Could we say that all together?
Playing in nature is good for me.
And Julia, how do you feel like nature really helps you shine? How do you know it's good for you?
I know that nature is good for me when I'm like going on a hike or just like having some alone time in nature, and you just get to like feel the peace of being there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And what's your affirmation?
My affirmation is nature is vitamin N.
Can we say that all together?
Nature is vitamin N.
And for me, I take good care of Mother Earth by trying to save water. Try not to use water, especially right now, but we've been really thankful for the rain that's come and the sunshine, so just being aware and conservative. So my affirmation is, I take good care of Mother Earth. So
yeah.
Can we say that last one together?
I take good care of Mother Earth.
Thank you.
Wow, you all said the message so well, I don't know that I need to say anything more. That was awesome. How many of you, when you woke up this morning, the first light you saw, no, let's be honest, was sunrise? Anybody see sunrise? And how many of you, the first light you saw was an electronic screen? I think there's some more that need to up the give it up. But, you know, that's kind of the cadence of our lives, isn't it? You know, our genius as human beings and what we've created technologically is fabulous, and yet one of the downsides is that there tends to be, or there can be, a little bit of a sense of separation with the natural world, because of the world we live in, the beautiful temperature-controlled environments and the technology we use. We don't always remember to go out and greet the sun as it rises and give thanks and really notice the colors in the sky that will never be quite like that again. That always amazes me. Or to say goodnight to the sun as it goes down and to welcome the moon. You know, these kinds of rituals are deep in our bones as human beings. Yet in our developed world, sometimes we have forgotten and created a little bit of a separation there. Yet we are the natural world, right? So if we are feeling a separation with the natural world, there is a separation happening within us. And so today, the message is nature mystics rock. And so I want to really move to nature mysticism, but also just really give some thought and reflection on this kind of cadence that we live in. You know, it's when we, at night, for some of us who maybe live in the country, you might hear the howling of coyotes at night or the song of birds all through the city. We hear that in the mornings and in the evenings. But for many of us, the cadence that we're really used to, the sounds that we're really used to listening to are things like the hum of our electrical appliances, you know, or the steady sound of traffic, or our neighbor's leaf blower. So these have become the sounds that we live with, and so it's all the more important then that we remember to take time to connect with the source, the ultimate source of these beautiful gifts that we have created. Chief Seattle reminds us this way. He says, "Humankind has not woven the web of life. We are but one thread within it. We are all bound together." And so all of us, all species, all life bound together, let us not get confused in our human genius. We didn't weave the web of life. We're a part of it. And I would even submit equals to all the species of the earth in many ways. We like to talk about our superior intelligence, but tell that to some of the migration patterns of animals, you know, some of the things that animals do that are beyond our understanding of intelligence. So I want to share with you a story. This actually doesn't come from the wild. It comes from the zoo, one step removed. But it's one that was really emblazoned in my heart about 30 years ago, actually. I was at the San Diego Zoo, and there was probably about 20 people outside the monkey cage. And we were all peering in, and there was a mother monkey, and she was playing with some of the baby monkeys, and there were a couple of other adults. And right outside the glass was a woman holding her baby. And that human baby had its hand up against the glass. And all of a sudden, that mother monkey looked over and began to just really look at that baby and mother. And she got down, and she sort of, you know, very reverently, but, you know, monkey-like, walked over and was really looking, and then she put her hand up to exactly match the way the baby's hand was on the other side of the glass. And it seemed as if she was peering into the heart and soul of that baby and really experiencing something there that we all, of course, none of us knew each other, and everybody just sort of did that collective, you know, oh my goodness, what an experience, kind of sigh. It's one of those moments that just reminds me of our oneness across all kinds of, you know, we have enough ways that we consider ourselves different as human beings, right? Let alone across species. So what a beautiful reminder of who we are as one. And, you know, in relationship, which is a lot of what we're doing as we open to Earth Day and what Earth Day is all about celebrating, we begin to think about our relationship with the natural world, our relationship with the earth, how we show up in relationship with all of life. And so if you think about it as this mother-child relationship, like the monkey and the baby, you know, we might think that the mother gives more than the child, you know, because that's the mother's responsibility, right? But really, there is a symbiotic reciprocity happening, isn't there? The baby gives back in many ways, right? The child gives us many things, love and joy and laughter and play and that kind of otherworldliness as they come in as infants, you know. And so there are so many gifts that come back to us too. And so if a mother in a family feels sort of resents or doesn't feel like she's being appreciated or feels exploited even in some way, you know, it doesn't bode well for the family, right? Anybody have these experiences? It's not good when mom's feeling like, you know, exploited. And so it is with us and Mother Nature, right? It doesn't bode well for us if Mother Nature feels like her human family is exploiting her. And so some of us have learned, and many scientists are telling us that that's exactly, you know, what's happening upon our earth. And maybe it's just the eyes I look through, but I have to say that every crisis that I've ever heard about, including this one that we're calling environmental crisis, has underneath it at its base a spiritual one. And so it is for us who are on the spiritual path to look at that through the spiritual lens. How do we contribute to the crisis, and how do we help solve it? Because when we do, there is healing for us, there's healing for all of life. So certainly that's one worth pursuing, I think. Anybody hear of Rachel Carson? Yeah, okay. Mother of the environmental movement, many people call her. She was also a scientist. And she wrote a book called A Sense of Wonder. And this was all about recognizing that as children, we come into this world with this just sort of innate sense of wonder and connection, deep connection with the natural world. We all know this, right? I mean, those of us who might, you know, eek when we see a bug now, we used to let those bugs crawl all over us and build little homes for them and all kinds of stuff, right? And so it is, you know, coming back to that sense of wonder and nurturing that sense of wonder that is a part of our experience of this relationship of reciprocity with Earth, with all of life, nurturing this. So Rachel Carson also is the one who let us know about DDT. Do you remember in the 50s? You know, some of you are nodding. You know, I've seen one of the documentaries on Rachel Carson's life, and it shows children eating their lunches at this picnic table. It's not funny, but it's amazing. And big clouds of this DDT is being sprayed all around them, you know. And so at that time, I guess we thought that was a great way to fumigate the insects and whatnot, but in the process, it was very dangerous, we found, for our health, for the planet's health. And so she was the one who raised the awareness around that. And then when she won an award in 1952, she was giving an acceptance speech, and she said, "Wonder and humility are wholesome emotions." She said, "Yet they cannot coexist with a lust for destruction." Wonder and humility, they cannot live with a lust for destruction. And this is where the rub is. This is where the separation is. So we all love nature. We all have that sense of awe and beauty and wonder and thank you and gifts. And yet there's this other piece that as a collective, we're not quite there in terms of our part in the relationship. So as we think about the ways that Earth's resources are available to us, we can become more conscious users, right? More conscious about the way, it's like a hunter, the difference between a hunter who hunts very consciously, really blesses the animal and gives thanks for the sacrifice that has been made and uses all parts of the animal. That's a really conscious experience of hunting. Or you could be a hunter who just is shooting big game for the fun of it and mounting a trophy head on your wall, you know, and bragging about it on social media. That feels to me like a very different kind of approach to the experience of hunting. Or you could even do a lighter footprint on the earth and go hunt mushrooms, you know. Some of my friends in Missouri hunt mushrooms, so those of you who are on live stream, hello. One in particular is an excellent cook, so she gets those morel mushrooms and really, yeah, I end up meeting them at the table. So this great paradox that we live with, that Rachel Carson lays out for us, what do we do about it? You know, how do we move forward? Even Einstein had something to say about the separation illusion that we have with the natural world. He said that the delusion of separation is a kind of prison for us, that our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of understanding and compassion and embracing all living creatures and the whole of nature. So Einstein, we think of him as, you know, creating so many amazing things beyond our understanding, most of the average person's understanding, I'll say beyond my understanding, but that theory of relativity that he's so known for, it's all part of this, right? It all has this spirituality infused in it. So I think religion, spirituality is part of the problem and part of the solution. And part of the problem is many of us have had this in our growing up or our experiences in other religious denominations or even other religions where we were taught that the body is to be denied, right? The body is less than. The body is maybe even evil and sinful. Sexuality is a sinful act unless it's being used in a very direct way for procreation or something like this. All these different kind of variations of this sort of theme we've gotten. You know, and then the earth is less than and considered in some ways not worthy of our attention because we've got this schism between paganism and Christianism, or Christianity, excuse me. Anybody hear these ideas? Did you grow up with some of this, get influenced with some of it? In some way, it just permeates through our whole culture, right? So regardless of whether we directly sat in the pews of a church where we heard this message or not, it permeates our culture. And then part of what then the message gets through for us is that spirituality and sexuality are separate. Sensuality and spirituality are something separate. And therefore the earth is also something that is separate, right? There's earth and heavens, and we're all aspiring to heavens. But if we get away from the orthodoxy of the church and the teachings of the church and kind of, if you will, the man-made ideas and the dogma, and we go back to the base and we look to our master teachers, we find something different. And this is always a good idea. That's why in Unity, a lot of times we're a little shy about claiming Christianity because we're so open to so many things. And it's because we're a little shy about that dogma and that orthodoxy that comes with it. And so instead we say we follow the teachings of Jesus. And we also are very open to all the master teachers. And so that gets us to the base. So it's not so much about the labels of what we are, but it's what do? We follow these teachings. And so Jesus was one who spent 40 days in the wilderness before he initiated himself into his ministry along with John the Baptist. He emerged from that 40 days of fasting and prayer in the wilderness and was baptized in the River Jordan. And remember the light of the Holy Spirit as he came up forth from the water. The Buddha became enlightened by sitting under a Bodhi tree. He wasn't sitting in a church or a temple. He was sitting outdoors under a Bodhi tree. That's where his enlightenment came forth. Muhammad meditated in caves for years before he came forward to found the religion that we now know as Islam. Moses, remember, he came down the river in a basket. And then he had 40 years of his own spiritual wilderness of learning and experiencing in the wilderness. And then he led the Israelites to 40 years in the wilderness before they got to the promised land. None of these spiritual masters were strangers to nature. All of them, in fact, knew that it was absolutely essential to the spiritual path, that we must honor this that is earth and that is earth and all around us that is earth. I mean, we can be indoors and still bring nature in, but we just have to be very conscious. What was that tree, what was that chair made of? You know, go back to the sources and give thanks for the sources and to bring life in, live plants and so on. So that is a part of our ongoing work, is this kind of consciousness, this consciousness work. So even in Unity, we have this old teaching of separation. Even in Unity, you know, Charles and Myrtle Fillmore are co-founders. Charles in particular talked a lot about overcoming sense consciousness. And so if you read some of his works, you'll hear this a lot. And he equated sense consciousness with serpent consciousness. So we get the kind of double whammy there, right? Snakes aren't so great, and our sensory nature, our sensuality isn't so great. It's lower. It's a lower vibration, was the teaching. Now, maybe if Charles were here, because he always said, I reserve the right to change my mind, he might bring forth a little bit more of the holism that I'm talking about. I hope so. I trust so. I think so. But he's not here, and I am. So that's what I'm sharing. So it is that, you know, that we want to focus on, not only about the transcendent work of spirituality, but also the deep-rooted earthiness of spirituality. Because if we just do one part, it's sort of like we're walking around like half the practice. You know, we need the whole thing, the whole enchilada, so to speak, to be whole, to be fully on our path, and to bring forth the healing that is needed for our physical beings and our earth. So it's great for us to be really conscious of outer things, of how to care for the earth, make conscious choices. If we make conscious choices about our bodies for the food we eat, generally, those are also good conscious choices for the earth. If we make good conscious choices of the resources we use, it's usually good for us and good for the earth. Most of the times those things work together. But just constantly being, you know, aware of that is one of the ways that we begin to heal, I think, and bring into wholeness what's being called forth for us, really. What's being shown to us everywhere we look, that some attention is needing to be made, and I believe those of us who are walking the spiritual path in a conscious way can really lead the way to healing. Many ecologists have pointed to religious leaders and spiritual leaders to say, we need you all to lead the way. We need the faith community to lead the way. The Fillmores talked about that too, that faith needs to be cast out forward and then science sort of catches up. You know, so we need to be the visionaries, but also the ones who are walking the talk, who are really living these principles. So I know some of you said you liked kind of having a little mnemonic device last week for what to take away, how to do this. How do I become a nature mystic, or how do I really embody or deepen myself as a nature mystic upon the earth and bring forth this kind of healing work? And so you can remember it really simply, CAP, C-A-P. You can think of a mushroom cap, maybe, since we talked a little bit about mushrooms. And so the C is for care, and we talked a little bit about that. Caring for the earth is also caring for the body, is making good conscious choices. And those good conscious choices are something that kind of keeps our touch on the earth a bit lighter. And also we can use our bodies to express and to worship, dance on the earth and sing to the trees, sing back to the birds. Try that sometime. Some of you might if you're birders, mocking the sound, you know, or the sound of the singing choruses of frogs, and you begin to have this conversation in their language. I often start a conversation in my language and think somehow they're connecting with it. And sometimes they act like they are. In fact, I did that with a lizard. In this last year, I lived on a nature reserve, UCSB, University of California, Santa Barbara Nature Reserve, and 6,000 acres. That was my front and backyard. So it was pretty amazing. And at the very height of the drought, and on a particularly hot day, I went for a hike. And I had some water with me, and along came this lizard, pretty good size one. And so I did what I do. I greeted it in English, you know. I don't know if it speaks English. But he seemed to respond to me, or she seemed to respond to me. And I thought about how thirsty the creatures must be, you know, at that time in particular. Thank God, as was mentioned by Faith earlier, we've had the rains, which has really helped lift us, all of life. But I had my water bottle, so I offered it some water, and the coolest thing happened. The lizard sort of like lifted up, you know how they do those little push-up kind of things? Sort of lifted up and opened its mouth completely and just drank and drank and drank from my water bottle. Yeah, and it was just this beautiful experience of reciprocity. And it completely filled me, as it does when we serve, to be of service in this way to this little brother or sister. And so it just sort of then wiggled off into the grasses after that, but it certainly made my day. And so once in a while we get those kinds of experiences that really stick with us, and once in a while we might just have a conversation in our garden. Or yesterday we had the Heart Ministers met. I'm learning, please bear with me. I'm getting the hang of what goes on here, but it may take me a while. Anyway, we met in the morning, and we had this beautiful Earth Day blessing and meditation out on the lawns that Marian led us. And we all just kind of had some quiet time. And it really gave me a chance to just be on the grounds. And I was connecting with the beautiful Italian cypress trees and touching them, you know, and just feeling like, whew, that protection that they hold. It's really powerful. Do you feel that when you... I don't know if you ever take the time, I really implore you to take some time with them and just really connect with them. But what it reminded me too of something that the ecologist David Abram recommends. He says that, in fact, I'm going to invite you to a sensory experience that might help you remember this. So I invite you to touch one of your hands to the other hand. And as you're doing so, just kind of notice how it feels to touch, but also notice how it feels to be touched. So you're the one who's touching and you're the one who's being touched. It feels quite different to receive than it does to give, right? So David suggests that when you're out in nature and you touch something alive, think about, too, how it might feel to that plant to be touched by you. So that there really is that kind of communion happening, that kind of intimacy with life. So that's just one small thing that we can do to create that kind of connection, deepen that kind of connection. So that's the C, taking care of the earth, nurturing this reciprocal relationship, and being conscious about how we use resources and how we care for the body as well as the earth. And then the A in CAP is attention. Paying attention, listening, contemplating. And for this, I turn to the nature mystic John Muir. He's a local, you know. Well, he's a Scot, but he's a local. In the sense that the Bay Area really became his home. Do many of you know who John Muir is? Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. His house is? Wow, yeah. We had a conversation about that at 8 o'clock. I didn't realize it was just down the street, though. Can't wait to go visit. Yeah, but what an amazing man, you know, a mountain man, a father of the U.S. National Park System, essentially, founder of the Sierra Club. Beautiful writings and poetry, and all of it permeates this nature mysticism. So if you want an idea of who is a nature mystic, John Muir, you don't have to look too much further. Really embodies this idea. And so he gives us, I want to actually share two of his quotes because I feel like they both really give us a little sense of that listening and that contemplation. The first is that he says, few are altogether deaf to the preaching of pine trees. Their sermons go directly to our hearts. And so listening in nature, whether it be the pine trees or the birds or the grass itself, you know, or the stones. There is preaching going on there. And sometimes very specifically for us, right? Specific insights and messages available for us. So there's a place for us to listen and to receive messages. And then there is also a place to just have patient observation. He talks about lying upon the rocks like the ice does still. But really, you know, you think about how ice or snow just really hangs heavy on the rock, right? So just letting yourself completely surrender to the rocks. And he said, when you do that, when we do that, lay upon the rocks as the ice did for so many years, it is a way to arrive at truths that are graven so lavishly upon them. So just being with the stones and the rocks, there's deep truths there to be heard and to be carried forth. You know, one thing we can do is ask the rocks and the trees and the earth, what blessing do I have to bring to you or to my people or to the animals, or to the plant kingdom, whatever it may be. And finally, the P is for praise. So this is actually much like the council guidelines that we use, listening deeply from the heart and then speaking from the heart. Then that kind of clear expression and gratitude that comes from that place, really, really pure, authentic kind of communication that comes directly from the heart. So I'm going to redeem Charles Fillmore now with this one. Charles said, intelligence is inherent in every form. We should be speaking words of truth to everything, the mineral, the vegetable, the animal kingdom. And so he speaks about the allness of God and the allness found in the natural world. And by speaking blessings and gratitude and thanks, this is one of the ways we do our part in the reciprocal relationship, by simply giving thanks for all that is. So these are some of the ways, I think, that we can really be this nature mystic in the world, if that's something that you feel called to do. I hope it is. And that beyond Earth Day, that we really embody this on a daily basis. It's good for us. You know, there's been studies done. UC Berkeley did a study a couple years ago that experiences of awe, particularly like examples of being in nature and the kind of awe that comes from looking at beautiful places or standing in beautiful places, actually has scientifically proven physical positive effects in that it lowers inflammation in the body. Ultimately, there's a chemical, and then it's related to lowering inflammation in the body, which means then our chances of things like heart disease and Alzheimer's and depression are actually lowered. So just by being in the experience of awe, and one great way to get your awe on, if you will, is to be in nature. Yeah. So these are some of the ways, and I just, you know, ultimately when we work the program of these ideas, when we really do care for body and earth, and when we pay attention to body and earth, and we praise body and earth, we have these amazing experiences of oneness that come along. And I want to share with you a story of one such experience of oneness. This goes back to the desert mothers and fathers. Anybody ever hear of the desert mothers and fathers? These are the early Christian mystics. Some of them lived as hermits, and some of them lived in communities, but they all lived out in the desert of Egypt and Syria and Palestine, about 300 to 500 AD. And the mothers and fathers, in their constant communion with spirit in nature, had these beautiful sayings and stories that came forward. There's some sayings of the desert fathers you can probably get a hold of online. But one of them is a story about Father Lot and Father Joseph. So Father Lot comes to Father Joseph, and Father Joseph is his elder. And he says, "Father, to the limit of my ability, I keep my little rule, my little fast, my prayer, meditation, and contemplative silence." He said, "And to the limit of my ability, I work to cleanse my heart of thoughts. But what more should I do?" And so Father Joseph rose up, and he put his hands up to the sky. And it said that his 10 fingers became like lamps of fire. And he said, "Why not become like fire?" Those experiences of oneness come along. We can't make them happen, but we can do our work so that we experience the beauty of how we are Earth itself. Let's close out with an affirmation together. So together, I love, bless, and celebrate the Earth. We are one. So it is. Happy Earth Day.